And we are back with another episode of the Kyle Lancelone Show. Solo today, but that's all right because I have a ton I want to talk about, a lot to break down, a lot happening in the U.S., around the world, worth noting. So on the list of topics today, Israel will strike first, the U.S. hardline position on talks, Iran isn't a threat to the U.S., and a war powers resolution that may get a vote in Congress next week. So let's start off here with this article from Politico. The headline is, White House officials believe the politics are a lot better if Israel strikes Iran first. And Politico talked to two sources close to the Trump administration who said senior advisors to President Donald Trump would prefer Israel strike Iran before the United States launches an assault on the country, according to two people familiar with the ongoing discussions. These Trump administration officials are privately arguing that an Israeli attack would trigger Iran to retaliate, helping to muster support from American voters for a U.S. strike. So this report is all about the fact that the American people don't want war with Iran. Trump won the popular vote in the last election. He was the American people's choice, and he was running on a platform of no more regime change wars. He had formed a coalition of Republicans this time in his administration, like J.D. Vance, like Tulsi Gabbard, like RFK Jr., who themselves had said that they were done with regime change wars. And so the American people looked at Donald Trump. They looked at the fact that, you know, he was excluding the Nikki Haley's and the Mike Pompeo's and embracing J.D. Vance and Tulsi Gabbard and said, all right, this is a man who finally understands that the American people are done fighting wars that don't benefit them, that only help the American military-industrial complex, NATO or Israel. We don't want any more of these conflicts. And that's why they vote for President Donald Trump. Now that Trump's in office, he seems to have fully embraced a neoconservative foreign policy agenda where he is willing to go to war in Iran for the benefit of the state of Israel. The American people see this. They see no good reason to go to war with Iran. If Donald Trump is to be believed, we already destroyed their nuclear facilities in June. And so we're against going to war in Iran. Doing a regime change there doesn't benefit the American people. It'll likely cause a lot of chaos that suddenly the American government is once again saying that the American people have to deal with. We'll be sending billions of dollars to Iraq and Turkey and other Afghanistan, other countries in the Middle East to deal with the flood of refugees. We'll be spending tens of billions of dollars backing our preferred rebel group, our proxy group, as different forces vie for power in Iran. We'll be conducting at least limited strikes in the country so we make sure there's no terrorist threat to the American soldiers in the region. This is a years-long entangling alliance that we're heading into, a conflict that we are heading into. The American people understand it, and they are opposed to it. So people in the Trump administration, they see this. You know, Donald Trump may be out there on Truth Social saying he's the most popular president ever and the American people love him and support the Trump agenda. But in reality, they don't. And so they have to find a way to get that support. And they figured out that if Israel attacks Iran, Iran will retaliate against Israel. And as we saw during the 12-day war in June, that Israel can maybe shoot down Iranian missiles for a week, but after that, Israel starts running out of interceptors and the Iranian missiles start getting through. And so once that happens, now our ally, as so many members of Congress and people in Washington believe, our most important ally, the most important country. Some, you know, people like Mike Huckabee and Ted Cruz seem to think it's even a more important country than the United States of America. And so once Israel is in jeopardy, then all of our politicians will be out there saying we have to go to war with Iran to defend Israel. We'll portray this as a defensive intervention rather than an offensive regime change war. And so that's how they're planning to sell it to the American people. I think that there is a very good chance that we see this happening in the coming days. There are maybe a few factors that would prevent Donald Trump. Some of them even mentioned in this Politico article, one, the just limited American arsenal. But it's not necessarily that they're concerned about depleting the American stockpiles in the event that the American homeland would be jeopardized. No, what they're saying is, look, if we, you know, launch this massive war against Iran, we use up all of our Patriot interceptors, all of our Tomahawk and other missiles, then what are we going to send to Taiwan if China invades? So we have to be prepared for a future war with China, which means we can't go to war currently with Iran. Honestly, that may be the best argument to make to President Donald Trump, that we have to be ready for a future war with China. And that's the reason that we can't go to war with Iran. I'm not saying it's my preferred argument necessarily to make, but it is one that probably resonates more in the Pentagon, in the White House. The other issue is the American casualties. And this is probably something that Donald Trump, even if he doesn't care about the individual lives of the American soldiers deployed to the Middle East who will become targets in this war, certainly caskets arriving, you know, draped in American flags in the United States of America, crying widows, is not going to be something that the American people want to see. So this, you know, those things could push Donald Trump against it. But I do think that we're headed for conflict, and in part that's because of the conditions that the Americans are putting forward to engage in talks with Iran. So there's a really important article out in the Wall Street Journal that I want to spend some time on going through. The headline, U.S. brings tough demands to Iran nuclear talks. And basically, they lay out the conditions that the U.S. is proposing in this article. So to start off here, they report, in the talks now underway in Geneva, U.S. negotiators were expected to make clear Iran must dismantle its three main nuclear sites at Fordo, Natanz, and Isfahan, and deliver all the remaining enriched uranium to U.S. officials. And so this I wanted to highlight because they're demanding that Iran dismantled these three nuclear facilities. But according to Donald Trump, they're all completely destroyed and unrecoverable. That Operation Midnight Hammer in June was such a success that there is no more enrichment or anything going on in Fordo. That the site has been completely neutralized, completely destroyed, and the American people don't have to worry about it, right? That was the success story that they were spinning in June, was we successfully knocked out Iran's nuclear sites in one giant swipe. This was a massive achievement for us, and we no longer have to worry about it. So why is this now a condition in the talks with the Iranians? I think it's a giveaway that they're lying about how destroyed those three nuclear sites are. Now, the next one in here, the other point in there is more important on making Iran send their nuclear enriched material to the United States. Iran has roughly 400 kilograms of 60% enriched uranium, and the United States is demanding that they give that to the United States. I don't think Iran is likely to go for that. The Iranians have proposed that they are willing to dilute that back down to, I think, either 1.5 or 3.67%, where it would be used in their nuclear energy program. So, you know, that seems like a reasonable offer from the Iranians. I think maybe a reasonable compromise would be for the U.S. to and Iran to agree for Iran to sell that to a third country like Russia, so at least they could get the profits off of that. Although currently, U.S. sanctions prohibit Iran from exporting their enriched uranium. Now, because the U.S. destroyed and at least disabled temporarily Iran's main nuclear enrichment facilities, Tehran may feel the need to hold on to this enriched material and dilute it back down to 3.67%, because that's the way they're planning on running their nuclear reactors in the future and providing energy to their countries. So now we can move on to the next part of this article. It says that the U.S. negotiators were also expected to insist that any nuclear deal must last forever and not sunset the way restrictions rolled off over time under the nuclear pact negotiated under the Obama administration that Republicans have long said was too weak. And so they're referring to the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, the JCPOA, or as most people know, the Iran nuclear deal negotiated between the Obama administration and Iran, signed in 2015, and then Trump withdrew from it in 2018. Under that deal, Iran disabled their heavy water reactor, and they agreed to only enrich uranium to 3.67% and even only have a limited number of centrifuges spinning enriched uranium. So it really limited Iran's nuclear program to civilian energy purposes. Additionally, the IAEA has a strict inspections regime of Iran's nuclear sites to ensure that they were not doing anything outside of the agreement. The IAEA continued to certify that Iran was abiding by that agreement, and Donald Trump withdrew from it in 2018. Now, that agreement did have some 15-year sunsets that basically said, once this certain point is reached, then Iran could enrich uranium to a higher level. Now, they weren't saying that they could enrich material to make a nuclear weapon. Iran would be prohibited from that under the Non-Proliferation Treaty, which they are a part of. It would only allow Iran to enrich uranium to, say, 20%, where they could use that for medical purposes and experimental purposes. Again, non-nuclear weapons purposes. Iran doesn't have a nuclear weapons program, never had a nuclear weapons program. So the idea that this is all about making a nuclear weapon is pure propaganda. So I highly doubt Iran would agree to these conditions, especially when we consider in the next part of this article, which is the U.S. is offering only minimal sanctions relief to Iran as a part of the deal. Another friction point, as Iran is hoping for substantial relief for its economy, a trigger for the mass protest that shook the regime early this year. So I think this is really important for a few reasons. One, if the U.S. is only offering minimal sanctions relief, I think Iran is really unlikely to go for any deal. The purpose of, at least ostensibly, the purpose of the U.S. sanctions on Iran is to make sure that they're not developing a nuclear weapon and to have something to exchange to the Iranians in exchange for signing an agreement saying that they're never going to have a nuclear weapon and limiting their nuclear program. So if we're not offering sanctions relief, then Iran's unlikely to go for it. But you also have to question then, what is the point of the sanctions? And I think the Trump administration has made it explicitly clear. The point of the sanctions is to impoverish Iran to the point that the people can no longer tolerate it, and they blame their own government, and they rise up against their government, and they overthrow their government, and Washington and Tel Aviv get the regime change in Tehran that they have long sought. That is the point of it. And so I think by the U.S. offering the minimal sanctions relief, we actually see here that regime change is still on the table, even with this agreement. And that's got to be a big point, a part of this for the Iranians, is that if we agree to this deal with the U.S., then the hostile policy is gone. We no longer have to worry about regime change. You can see that our nuclear program doesn't present a threat to Israel. Your nuclear weapon states were not. And so, you know, this is basically hands up, right? But that's obviously not what's going on here with the lack of sanctions relief. And so I think regime change is still in play, that the goal here is still to overthrow the Iranian government. One other part of that I don't have the actual wording here from the Wall Street Journal, but basically what they explained in this article is the U.S. isn't addressing the missile issue and the issue of Iran's allies in these negotiations with Tehran, and they're going to leave it to the American allies in the Middle East to determine how to deal with these issues. And Israel has made it very clear that if Iran doesn't agree to limit the range of its missiles to 300 kilometers, that they are going to attack the Iranians. And with, you know, that not being on the table, Israel is, the U.S., I think, here signaling that we're still going to see an Israeli attack in Iran one day. And again, referencing back to before, you know, that's how the White House kind of wants this to play out, with an Israeli attack on Iran first. So I think even if they do agree to a deal under the U.S. terms, it is still effectively setting the stage for regime change in Iran, just maybe months or years down the road, rather than a war happening right now. Now, another part of this article that I found really interesting is that the U.S. is offering Iran to conduct a limited amount of enrichment at one experimental facility in Tehran. And the U.S. is getting a lot of criticism for this. So they're proposing this really hardline deal. Even the Wall Street Journal is framing it that way, and that is a very hawkish outlet towards Iran. But they're making this one small concession, and they're actually eliciting a freak out among Republicans. Lindsey Graham is saying that we shouldn't make any concessions, that that's a bad deal. There's others that are calling this the JCPOA light, meaning just like Barack Obama, Donald Trump is giving away too much. All very absurd. But I think we could really see the political climate here in the United States, where a lot of people want war, not just in the White House, a lot of them on Capitol Hill, and a lot of them seem even maybe more hawkish or aggressive, particularly the Republicans, Lindsey Graham, Ted Cruz, John Thune, the Speaker of the House, said today, or not Speaker of the House, the Leader of the Senate, said today that he would support Donald Trump attacking Iran, and that the goal of that attack should be regime change in Tehran. Now, they're trying to present Iran somehow as a threat to the United States. Here's Secretary of State Marco Rubio.
Iran poses a very great threat to the United States and has for a very long time. They are in possession, first and foremost, after their nuclear program was obliterated, they were told not to try to restart it. And here they are. You can see them always trying to rebuild elements of it. They're not enriching right now, but they're trying to get to the point where they ultimately can.
So, you know, obviously the Iranians, even by Marco Rubio's own assessment here, the Iranians don't present an actual threat to the United States. He says they're not enriching uranium. If they're not enriching uranium, then they, even if they wanted to, which they don't, but even if they wanted to, they couldn't build a nuclear weapon if they don't have a current enrichment program. So why are we talking about attacking them right now if there's no cause to attack them by Marco Rubio's own admission? We hear from the administration, oh, they're developing missiles to hit the United States. No, they're not. Their threat is Israel. There's plenty of American targets in the Middle East. They're developing missiles that could hit American military facilities in the Middle East or Israel should the United States or Israel attack Iran again. That's Iran's defense plan. That's their game plan. All these threats that Iran presents the United States, Iran presents zero threat, zero hostility towards the United States as long as the U.S. doesn't attack Iran. They're not even threatening to attack the United States, even though we've intentionally imposed sanctions on their country that have, and this is the point, as said by American officials, to cripple their economy. They want people in destitution, people unable to get medication and dying, people unable to feed themselves and their children in Iran. There was a former U.S. official who said he found out the price of chicken had like doubled or tripled in Iran, and that this was cause for celebration. You know, the economic war against the Iranians is pure evil. It's disgusting. And yet, even with that, the Iranians aren't threatening to attack the United States of America. They're only threatening to attack in response to an American attack. Iran presents no threat whatsoever to us. They don't even present a threat to the state of Israel. They're not trying to destroy or eliminate the Jewish state. There may have been some rhetoric about that in the past, but look at what's occurred over in the Middle East over the past two decades. Iran is clearly just trying to get in a position where they could defend themselves from the U.S. and Israel and possess a meaningful deterrent, which is something that all countries would want to have. So before we wrap up the show for the week here, I do want to talk about one issue that's not getting a lot of attention, and that's all the legality, the constitutionality of the U.S. waging a war against Iran. This is kind of baffling that it's not even talked about. It's not even a major point of discussion. Every time these senators are going on the Sunday morning talk shows or CNN or Fox News, they're not being asked. The president says that we're going to war with Iran potentially as soon as this weekend. Are you concerned that there's no declaration of war, no authorization for use of military force, no congressional allocation of funding for a war with Iran, an offensive, aggressive war, an unprovoked war? Do you not have any concern about voting on this in the halls of Congress? Because this was, you know, when our system was set up, one of the main points was one man cannot decide to send the United States to war. It was supposed to develop in the House of the People, the House of the Representatives, and only if the people felt meaningfully threatened that they were willing to send their sons and daughters to war to kill and be killed, that decision could only be made with the consent of the people. And there's not even a real discussion of this right now in Washington, D.C. It's not a major topic of conversation. It's not a major concern. Now, there is a war powers resolution that it looks like will get a vote in the House. It's being pushed by Ro Khanna and Thomas Massey. And apparently the House Democratic leadership is backing a vote for this next week. Now, I have several problems with this. The first is the timing issue. The vote is apparently coming up next week, so Trump could attack before this vote even takes place. Although, even if it does pass the House, then it has to be brought up in the Senate. Vote on the Senate. It goes to the president's desk. Trump apparently could veto war powers resolutions. He did so in his first administration. Seems like that should be unconstitutional, but that's how our system works. So then we'd have to go back to the House to override the veto, back to the Senate to override the veto. Obviously a process that could take weeks, or if they want to, months to play out. And by that time, the U.S. is either going to war with Iran or we're not. So on the timing issue, this seems completely ineffective. Now, I want to kind of point to the politics and the perception issue of it. And I think what Massey and Khanna should have done is, rather than introduce a war powers resolution to try to constrain the president and prevent the president from going to war with Iran, they should have introduced a declaration of war and make members of Congress vote for war if they really support it. I think the war powers resolution is going to fail if it does end up going up for a vote. And this isn't the way that our system legally works, but so much about how American politics now is all about perception. It's not about process or constitutionality or legality. It's what can you get away with, and is that a major issue? And so if Congress rejects a resolution to stop the president from waging war with Iran, they're going to present this as the perception of Congress approved Trump from going to go to war with Iran. At the same time, members of Congress will never say that they voted for war with Iran. So there's really, Congress doesn't accept any responsibility there. So by actually making them vote on going to war, a declaration of war, which I ultimately think that they don't end up passing, then there is a firm rejection coming from Congress against going to war with Iran. I think maybe that's a better political move. Now, maybe it passes and Congress has then signed off and this is a constitutional war, but I think we're going to war with Iran anyway. So I think it would probably be worth the gamble. Now, one senator was asked about potentially voting on the war powers resolution, and this is what John Fetterman had to say.
And to vote on Senator Paul and Senator Kane's war powers resolution too.
Is that coming up?
Yeah, they just.
Oh, I didn't know that for sure. Well, then that's a down.
Down.
Oh yeah.
Why
yeah,
is that?
No. I mean, I voted no on it earlier, and I supported striking the nuclear facilities, and I think it probably will become like appropriate to do that. We can never allow, if anyone in the Senate thinks we should never allow Iran, if anyone in the Senate doesn't want to acquire a nuclear bomb for Iran, then we have to make that and put that on the table, and I'm going to vote for that.
How exactly would strikes on Iran benefit the American people, like on the ground in Pennsylvania, for example?
It absolutely does. It makes the Middle East safer.
But peace. In Pennsylvania?
Yeah, absolutely.
How so? Mm-hmm. But like, how does it benefit them? Like, does it put more money in their pockets?
I'm voting it no. So, and I think we're good.
It absolutely baffling to watch that slug of a man waddle through the halls of the Capitol. Can't even walk and talk without running out of breath. He's winded halfway through and has to ask the reporter to stop. And this is the man that's getting to determine U.S. policy. He has no good argument for going to war. We can't allow Iran to have a nuclear weapon. You said you supported the strikes on Iran that destroyed their nuclear program. What is he talking about? Like, what threat do the Iranians pose? He can't come up with one. He's asked about his constituents in Pennsylvania. This will make the Middle East safer. How has going to war in any country in the Middle East made the Middle East safer? It doesn't really matter for Pennsylvanians anyways, but say that it did, it won't accomplish that. It's going to be destabilization and chaos. And to the extent that we've gotten the regime change that we've wanted in the Middle East, look at Syria. Abu Mohammed al-Jolani, a former al-Qaeda commander, a former ISIS commander, is now ruling that country with the blessing of the United States. How has that made anyone in the United States safer? Clearly, it hasn't. They have no good arguments for going to war with Iran to sell to the American people. That's why they're going to have Israel attack first. So Fetterman, Graham, Cruz, and all the other hats in the House and the Senate could get up in front of their constituents and say, we have to defend our greatest ally, Israel. You have to support us in this. They're going to go in. They're going to try a regime change. They're going to ignite a war. Americans are going to be killed. Many, many Iranians are going to be killed. This is going to be an absolute disaster. And there's not even one competent person within our government who could articulate a coherent argument for this war. We shouldn't let this happen, but I'm afraid it's going to. All right, everybody, that will do it for the show today. I really appreciate you all so much for tuning in. If you like the show, be sure to like, share, and subscribe our episodes. Check out past episodes. I had Colonel McGregor on Wednesday's show, Larry Johnson on Monday. So really great guests coming on to break all this down. People have really important insight and analysis. So don't miss an episode of the show. We'll be back on Monday at 4:45 Eastern. Thanks, everyone.
If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.